And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon. How are you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
Today is Labor Day in Toronto. In Montreal, they don't celebrate the same way. I don't know if we do, actually. We're going to have a guest a little later on to tell us what has been going on. Last week on the show, we interviewed Sid Ryan, former leader of the OFL. And, Phil, you were just telling me that you thought Sid's summary was appropriate.
I think he's saying things that he said the emperor has no clothes, and I'm glad he did, because what we have for a Labor Day in Toronto and what we have had traditionally is, frankly, disgraceful. It's like a picnic for people on their day off. It doesn't talk about the labor movement and what we're fighting for and what we need and the threats that we're facing. It just doesn't do it.
And there are many, many problems. There's nothing wrong with having differences within the labor movement and a little shouting, a little shoving, people get exercise, and then that's how you move forward. That's actually true in politics. But when you just, I'll call a movement, but you refuse to move, and I thought he did assess it well. Partly it's because we're not in sync with the world labor movement.
That's right.
He pointed out that actually only U.S. and Canada do not celebrate May Day. Everywhere else in the world they do, actually, including countries that everybody here considers quite reactionary. But they do note that May Day is an internationally recognized matter. So we will be talking, we expect, with someone who attended. This year it was different in that, as Sid pointed out, and that because there's a lockout at the CNE, the usual morning parade into the X did not happen. And instead, the plan was to go into to the stadium on King Street, I believe.
Right.
And we expect him to be in solidarity. Our guest is going to be here in a moment, but I'll tell you what we're going to do. I want to say something about the passing of the Arizona senator, and then we'll have our guest. By way of talking about it, I just say that Ann Garrison, Black Agenda Report, and who's been our guest, has written a good piece in Black Agenda Report and elsewhere. You just write Ann Garrison, and a story will come up. And she's, like ourselves, I believe, in many, she's detected that they're using the occasion, they've used others, to replay the Vietnam War and change the positions of people around. And so there's, at the funeral, Henry Kissinger gave one of the little eulogies. But it's entirely appropriate, because as somebody said, every last one of these war criminals was there. But it's particularly galling in the case of Kissinger, because if he's known for any, on the matter of, people use the term loosely about crimes, but under President Nixon, it was on the advice and guidance of Kissinger that they bombed Cambodia. And the estimates of loss of life is at about a half million, I believe. This was a secret war. The American people were not told. It went on for reasons you'd have to ask that sadistic maniac. These are guys who, of course, armchair people. They pick up a phone, and 500,000 people die. And a young naval officer who had just been released from prison was one of the people who thought that was a great idea and defended it. So the two were – it was very appropriate. Kissinger was there. And both of them still, but particularly Senator McCain from Arizona, are advocates of – and they used the funeral to say so – intervention in the name of democracy. The daughter of McCain said that her father was fighting in a faraway world for democracy. There couldn't be anything further from the truth. And So the Vietnam War is being recast. And I just want to point out that they've really created some headaches for themselves, as far as I'm concerned. They've decided that he is a hero, and they all said it. And his behavior is actually a matter of record. As you probably know, Phil, a U.S. serviceman is told, ordered, to give his name, his rank, his serial number, and his date of birth. Anything other it's actually forbidden. There is they don't give you an out. So McCain, who they now tell us is a hero, I think they're causing a problem. If you're telling recruits now in Paris Island and Camp Pendleton and Quantico, here is the rules. This is what you do. If you happen to become a captive, you have to do. You have to organize resistance. You have to plan an escape. By the way, that's part of your orders. Now, so McCain told, ended up on the radio. If you want to find this, just go on the net. He made an announcement for Vietnam, but I thank him for that. It was helpful, I suppose. He did make a broadcast in which he said that he was an aggressor. It wasn't heavy on what you might call political rhetoric. It was it was kind of the kind of language I might think John McCain would speak. It's not a long statement, but he did do that. And every speech about him says he was tortured. And so that's become ritualistic fact. We're all to believe he was tortured. Now, the Washington Post and a Toronto Star and others carried a story about one of his captors, the man who was the colonel of where he was held. The Americans call it the Hanoi Hilton. I understand now it's a tourist attraction, so they sort of doll it up and you can go look because they're looking for business. Now, that captor, who was a colonel, was in charge. They said he liked McCain. And so they're saying even he's sorry. And he did. He said, I send my condolences to the family. He said, I liked him. He said, we used to talk about all kinds of things. He said that. And that's all we read in the Star and the Washington Post. But I read the original of that, or at least the same, seemed to be the same story, in the South China News. And they had an additional thing he said, which is he wasn't tortured. We didn't torture him. But no one gives time of day or any respect for that statement. Instead, because we're deeply into this being colonial power, we know if our guy says he's tortured, well, he was tortured, you know. So further to that, and my favorite story, because they said, well, you know, he was a tough guy. You know, we all know he didn't crack it. He didn't give away any important information. If he did give some, who wouldn't is sort of the way they put it. And I grant you, I don't know what I would do. But one, I also remind you, the Vietnamese said they didn't torture him. The other thing they said is that they didn't harm him. That he had been bombing them. This is his 23rd bombing mission. He had dropped a lot of lethal weaponry on that population, and he got shot down. And today, my understanding is it was a missile. He didn't anticipate that. He said he felt pretty much safe, obviously, because at the altitudes he was flying. But a missile struck him and knocked him down. And he tried to bail, and it was a botched bail from that type of plane. It didn't totally clear the aircraft. So he was swung against the side of the plane. He said so. His arm was broken, and right arm in three places. His left arm, they said, was broken. I've never heard it described how. The reason I mention detail is that some of the media are playing fast and loose with the details, and they're not getting them right. But three breaks in the right arm, and his knee was broken, and I think other places in his leg. He landed, lucky man, in a lake. And the Vietnamese there, it was the middle of the day, they swam out to get him, and they pulled him in, and they took him to a hospital. Now, today, they're all reconstructing that, and they said, oh, he put him right into a prison, and he didn't get any good treatment. Well, he got good treatment. The Vietnamese said they gave him good treatment. The arm was repaired, the right arm. You break an arm in three places in the way that he did it, you're never going to be – you're not going to be a pitcher anymore if you're right-handed. But they've turned this into, oh, no, the people beat him. And then they said, then he stabbed him. Well, then why did they pull him out of the lake and take him to the hospital or take him to the prison? If their object was to kill him, that wasn't going to be that hard old job. But the hatred involved in that kind of generalization that the media is engaging in, it's just a disgrace here. And all of our major media are playing along. Which leads me up to my favorite story, because they say, well, he did talk to, you know, once in a while he said something, and maybe he shouldn't have said something. All right. In 1970, he gave an interview to the communist newspaper of Cuba, Granma, on January 24th. And he was interviewed by Dr. Fernando Barro. And you can find him. He has a cafe in Havana. And by the way, all my listeners and many Cuba friends here, I think we should all go to his cafe. He, on January 24, 1970, had an interview with this American lieutenant commander and pilot. He said he wanted to talk to McCain because he had been interviewing Vietnamese women who were part of the resistance, and he wanted to know psychologically. He was a psychiatrist. He wanted to know, you know, how do you bear up under those kinds of conditions? And does it transform you? Does it, you know, he was doing a study. He had won a prize in Havana for an essay he wrote about anti-colonial resistance. He was, by the way, just to bring in detail, a friend of Che Guevara's. It's a long story. But so this psychiatrist said, he asked the Vietnamese, could I talk to one of these pilots? Because I'm having talked to these people who've been bombed and are fighting back, I'm interested in the guy who was bombing them. And, you know, what's his outlook? So they arranged a meeting at the Vietnam's cultural center, where he said he had the details. He had oranges and cookies and coffee. He even noted that McCain had three cups of coffee and a couple of cigarettes. And he found McCain very candid. So candid, at one point in the interview, McCain says, "Well, I haven't seen my wife. I got a package from her at Christmas. I haven't seen her. You know, she's." And then he bragged. He said she's a model and a beauty contest winner. And he said, and so the guy said, would you like me to get in contact with her? He said, sure, I would. I'd ask you to. He said, you realize I'm not going to be able to go to the U.S., but if you want. He said, yes. So give me your address. McCain gave him his wife's address. So they seem to be getting along, much you might say. He said that he had been, he told the story how he broke his arm, and he held his own in terms of, he didn't say, well, I'm a bad person. As a matter of fact, Fernando Burrell, the psychiatrist, said he was a boastful man. He said he seemed to be kind of banal. He seemed to act like he's at a cocktail party talking about war. And another important detail that McCain shared, which I found interesting, and all you Vietnam War historians ought to look into it. He said his father, of course, was an admiral, and his his grandfather was an admiral in the United States Navy. And he said, actually, my father has more rank. He's higher rank, and he has more responsibility than General Abrams in Vietnam. But he says, but they bypass my father. He said, my father's in Honolulu. He said, and Abrams goes directly to Washington, which is really not appropriate. And then the Cuban psychiatrist said, I'm really not interested in that stuff. I thought you had a chain of command. He said, no, that's not how it works. So I like the young McCain. I like, you know, that one who he seemed to be friendly, talkative. And again, I don't hold it against him, but I'm interested in all you guys who got together there in a church and said he was a hero and all that stuff, and then he was tortured. Why don't you mention that he gave an interview to the grandma? It seemed like that sort of be a peace gesture. friendly gesture. Now, why was Vietnam, by the way, he became known as one of the senators who advocated new relations with Vietnam. This is a tangled mess. And you should understand, the reason that McCain and Clinton were interested in cultivating Vietnam in 1995, and a lot of right-wing Republicans signed on for this, was because they wanted Vietnam to become an ally against China. So it was a nice, one of those nice things, it was just a humanitarian thing. You become our pal against this other guy. That was what it was about. But anyway, I do urge you, you can read the article. You can actually, the Washington Post, if you want to know, the Washington Post wrote a story about this in 2008, where they went to the cafe of Professor Dr. Fernando Barral, who has a, again, I remind you, and I'm trying to promote him. I want everybody to go to his restaurant. He's a nice little restaurant. So they went there, and in his restaurant, he has a picture of himself and Lieutenant Commander McCain, and he has the article, which he's kind of proud of that he did that, and so. That's the other part. Lastly, on the matter of why does Canada keep calling McCain a hero? Actually, the mythology or legend in Canada is Canada did not get involved in the Vietnam War, and it was a bloody debacle, and thank heavens they didn't. That's the position. And the high moment for Canadians in remembering the Vietnam War is that Lester Pearson, the Liberal Prime Minister, was invited by some American liberals to give a talk in the United States. And he gave, in his talk, he said, I would like to see a pause, not a stoppage, a pause in the bombing, the heavy bombing of Vietnam, so as to open a little window for hopefully a negotiated solution. And the Canadians all are told to remember that because he then got a phone call saying, the president would like to see you at his ranch in Texas. And he flew to the ranch, which was the real White House, I guess, where the president, according to Lester Pearson, grabbed him by the lapels and shook him. So now we all don't – everybody says Trump is a little vulgar. You know, a president of the United States giving the prime minister of Canada a shake and reading him off. He really did read him off about butting into America. But that's the story we were remembering. But we're going to ditch that now. Now we're going to go with – he's a hero. And what's he, defense minister, Mr. Sajjan? Is he the defense minister? I loved his statement. And I just slapped my forehead. He said he really respected and was in awe of the Arizona senator. He said, McCain always made time for me. And so he did. Really? The Arizona senator made time for you? Who, you're the defense minister of Canada. Does the defense minister of the United States make any time for you? It's to be proud that a congressman, you have a kind of a big job, defense minister, and you say an Arizona senator always made time for you. Wow, lucky you. Maybe you could put in a word for Ms. Freeland because she's got some hard times going, you know. It's pathetic. It is pathetic. We could go down the list of people who are just showing themselves to be rotten. I was very impressed that Obama went to McCain's funeral, but he did not go to Aretha Franklin's funeral. He didn't go to hers. Bill Clinton is, of course, old Clinton. He went to both. Heck with it. You know, Clinton says, I'll lie anytime. He was on the podium with Minister Farrakhan. He was sitting three seats over from Farrakhan, which good for him. Farrakhan's got good manners. He didn't object. But, you know, it tells American politics is hairy. I mean, it is hairy stuff down there. So anyway, make sure you read McCain's interview with Grandma. It was both Washington Post and in 2008 did a photo story on it. And you can find it from January 24th, 1970. But you got to just get into this. But if you're not – you have to go to the sites who actually have two eyes and are not into idolatry. CNN said yesterday that it rained briefly in Washington and the angels were crying. So that's called journalism. We're going to take a break here. We'll have a little Lee Morgan to cheer us up, and then we will talk to Michael Hirsch, the steelworkers.